Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
There are riots in Athens. Wall Street is occupied. So today on the broadcast, what protesters and the bankers have to say about it all. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Wake up to the day's top business headlines. Subscribe to the Marketplace Morning Report podcast. It's on iTunes and marketplace.org/podcasts.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. Good to have you here on this Wednesday, everybody. It's the 19th of October, and in Athens, Greece today, what you can only call massive protests. Sometimes, judging by the sound of them, violent too. Tens of thousands of people, some estimates had it as high as 100,000 or more, took to the streets to protest the latest dose of economic austerity. The Greek parliament today approved more cuts to pensions and wages, public sector layoffs, and changes to union bargaining rules as well. Among those on the streets today was Cilia Vitoratou. We got her in Athens on a Skype connection. Cilia, good to have you with us.
Good to talk to you guys.
Tell me what it was like out on the streets today in Athens.
You could see people of all ages, all incomes. I think the Greek society was really well represented today in the center of Athens.
Tell me a little bit about yourself. Where do you work? What do you do?
Actually, I'm a biostatistician. I'm currently finishing my PhD on biostatistics. And I work as a freelancer, as a professional statistician.
And not to get too personal, but how are your finances? I mean, you know, there's this austerity budget coming down. How's it hitting you?
The cuts are not affecting me directly as a freelancer. But the thing is, taxes are. And even though I have a very low income, that would be around 700 euros per month, more or less, I'm still obliged to pay taxes as big as 600 euros this month. Plus my insurance, my pension insurance. As you can understand, things are getting pretty difficult.
What do you want the government to do, though? I mean, the money's not there, so something has to give.
Okay. I'm not an expert when it comes to economics, that's for sure. And so I don't have a pretty smart solution to tell you. All I know is that they should stop austerity measures because it's obvious, even for non-experts, that it's not working. I'm sure that there are solutions they come up with, like, for example, the obvious, tax the rich people. They are not properly taxed at all. They always come up with ways to avoid taxes. And what you have is the poor people having all this burden.
Do you want a bailout from the European Union? Do you think you should have one?
Do you think that this is working?
Yeah, well, no.
I don't think this is possible. I don't think this is possible. It seems that all we are getting is more and more expensive loans, that pretty unfair ones. And it's a circle that we cannot escape.
Cilia Vitoratou in Athens today, where she's been on the streets. Cilia, thank you.
Thank you very much. Kai?
Yes?
There's something I would like to say.
Go ahead.
I've been looking at the media and the web pages, and all I can see is rioting. I've been standing in a corner for 4 hours watching people marching in front of me. Mm-hmm. And these were pretty peaceful. Please do not keep on the stereotypes about Greece and about the protests.
We'll
That's
try.
What I would like to share with you. Okay?
We'll try. Cilia, thank you.
Thank you very much, Kai.
It took a while, but the protests that have been happening in other countries for months now finally landed in the United States with Occupy Wall Street, of course. And it's not like protests against Wall Street or anything new, though. There have been plenty of them over the years, going back to the days of J.P. Morgan himself. The present-day versions have attracted enough people to shut down the Brooklyn Bridge and take over Times Square and march to billionaires' Manhattan townhomes. They have a lot of energy, a lot of emotion. And if you work on Wall Street in this day and age, maybe some danger, too. Our New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore has that story.
When the Occupy Wall Street protests started last month, they used Wall Street as a symbol. But now they want to put a human face on it. Protesters have marched on the homes of billionaire hedge fund manager John Paulson and Jamie Dimon, the CEO of J.P. Morgan. A popular website published the cell phone numbers of the CEOs of Goldman Sachs and Citigroup.
There is a small contingent of people on Wall Street that understand why there's anger, but then there's a growing sense that it's starting to become personal.
That's Josh Brown with Fusion Analytics. He's been to Zuccotti Park, and he says the protesters are not violent. But there have been clashes with the police, and emotions are running high, says Richard Lipstein. He recruits people for Wall Street jobs.
If a Wall Street professional went up to a demonstrator and started saying, "I'm from Wall Street, I don't agree with what you're doing," God knows what would happen.
And there's the feeling that face-to-face confrontation is not far off. A new website, Occupy the Boardroom, lists the names of financial executives and encourages protesters to telephone them or email them, or even pursue them to the ends of the earth. The site instructs people not to harass the executives, but harassment is in the eyes of the beholder. Here's Lipstein again.
There is some validity and some credibility to what the demonstrators are saying. It's just, I think personalizing it does damage to their point of view.
Since the financial crisis, bankers and traders are used to laying low. The Blackstone Group has no signs on its offices. T. Rowe Price has a new unidentified skyscraper just steps from the sleeping bags of the Occupy Baltimore Group. In New York, some young finance workers go to work in jeans, so their suits don't mark them for trouble. Yet Chris Whalen, a former investment banker, says bankers have nothing to be afraid of. And with thousands of layoffs coming to Wall Street, the protests might even pick up some bankers.
I haven't heard of any bankers being assaulted, and I think the bankers ought to put on their pinstripes and go to the protest.
For the foreseeable future, however, most Wall Streeters plan to give the protests a wide berth. In New York, I'm Heidi Moore for Marketplace.
Every 8 weeks, the Federal Reserve comes out with something called the Beige Book, its look at the U.S. economy region by region. Today's version was less than entirely reassuring. There is growth, the Fed said, but not enough. And get this, businesses are cutting back on spending, it said, not what you want to hear. You roll all that into one big ball of wax, and what you get is Wall Street pulling up stakes. All three major indices headed south into the close. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. We are commentaries on a fairly regular basis, points of view on one topic or another. We set aside 2 minutes every Wednesday for our regulars, Robert Reich, and until last week, David Frum. David has decided he's not the best person for us anymore, as you heard last week on the show. Bob uses his time today to respond.
Last week, David Frum, who alternates Wednesday commentaries with me, called it quits as a regular commentator. He explained he could no longer represent the views of most people who call themselves Republicans and conservatives. I respect David's decision, but it's a sad commentary, no pun intended, on what's happening to public discourse in America. Why exactly was it necessary for David to represent the views of conservative Republicans? I don't feel any obligation to represent liberal Democrats. Over the years, I've argued, for example, in favor of getting rid of the corporate income tax and creating school vouchers inversely related to family incomes. And I'm opposed to putting trade sanctions on China for so-called currency manipulation. None of these positions represents liberal democratic orthodoxy. The public doesn't want or need to hear representatives from the so-called right or left. It wants insight into what's best for America. And yet, over and over again, on the radio, on TV, in print, in the blogosphere, and all over Washington, political ideology is substituting for thought. Politicians take oaths and sign pledges. Special interest groups abide by litmus tests and ideological labels. Pundits are either on the left or the right. David says he disagrees with most Republicans these days about whether now is the time to cut public spending and shred safety nets. Well, it so happens a majority of economic policy experts also think now is not the right time. David's voice will be sorely missed. Yet I understand his dilemma. Introducing him last week, Kai Ryssdal said David had been a regular commentator on this program for years, offering the voice of the political right against Robert Reich and the views of the political left. Kai, my friend, that's the problem in a nutshell. Labels like this fuel what's happening all over America right now. We're getting empty phrases and unthinking ideology instead of arguments, facts, and logic. We're either on the right or the left, and we don't have to listen to anyone on the other side.
Robert Reich teaches public policy at the University of California, Berkeley. His most recent book is called Aftershock, The Next Economy and America's Future. Send us your thoughts about what you hear on the broadcast. Our website is marketplace.org. Click on that link that says contact.
I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter.
We'll start letters today with one last thought on David Frum. Most of the mail we got on the days that his commentaries ran wasn't all that positive, you might say. Now that he's moved on, though, sure, that's when he gets all the love. Sean Peterson of Miami spoke for many of you when he said he might not always have agreed with David's views, but he's sad to see him go.
While I agree that his positions are no longer representative of the political right wing, it seems more like the party left him than vice versa. I understand the need to reflect the views of both sides of the spectrum. I just hope his replacement can represent them accurately and still keep the segment fact-based and free of hyperbole.
We had Farhad Manjoo on from Slate the other day with a commentary about how job seekers are facing new competition from robots. There's even software, it turns out, that can write news stories. David Burns wrote from Needham, Massachusetts.
Endino smacked a game-winning single in the ninth. Might have been poetic in 1927, but now it's hack writing. Indeed, the sports story writing software does nothing more than manipulate previously stored symbolic phrases in an imitation of what once was poetic sports story writing.
Finally, we sent Stacey Vanek Smith to North Dakota the other day, the land where jobs are plentiful. Hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, to get oil out of North Dakota's substantial reserves has a lot to do with that. Paula Fitzsimmons lives in Hudson, New York, and she says creating jobs is great, but we should have talked about the health and environmental impact of fracking as well.
As we watch our neighbors in Pennsylvania deal with the downside and watch fracking move toward us in New York, I believe there are better ways to create jobs.
You can send us your thoughts. Go to marketplace.org. Click on that link that says contact. And now, let's do the numbers. A discouraging economic outlook from the Federal Reserve that I mentioned hung over the stock market today. That helped push the Dow Industrial 72 points lower, about 2/3%, finished at 11,504, the blue chips did. The NASDAQ sagged 53 points, 2%, 2604 at the bell. The S&P 500 gave back 15 points, 1.25%, settled at 1209. Apple shares sliced off more than 5.5% today, fell below $400 they did on the tech giant's disappointing third-quarter profits yesterday. Other tech stocks suffered as well. Hewlett-Packard dropped 2.5%. Network hardware maker Cisco Systems lost 2%. Intel was the exception. Shares of the chipmaker rallied better than 3.5% on favorable third-quarter results and a rosy outlook for the remainder of the year. Yahoo earnings beat expectations. Stock in the internet content provider added 3% today. Bond prices edged higher. That nudged the yield on the 10-year Treasury note down to 2.16%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Thursday. The National Association of Realtors reports on sales of existing homes for September. The Senate Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs Committee holds a hearing titled Housing Finance Reform, Continuation of the 30-Year Fixed Rate Mortgage. And let's talk about the weather. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration issues its U.S. Winter Outlook. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. APM is another way to say that. I'm Kai Rizdal. What I'm about to say is a little bit like debating how many economists can fit on the head of a pin, but work with me here. We'll see how it goes. The Federal Reserve has been saying for years now that there's basically no inflation in this economy, and the Consumer Price Index number that came out today would tend to support that. Core inflation rose just 0.1% last month. Catch is, though, that you can't live on the core alone. People have to eat. They have to buy gas. So the headline number, as it's called, is what most people really care about, up 0.3% last month. And it helps explain today's news that Social Security payments will rise 3.6% next year. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has the story.
We're not talking about a lot of money here. The Social Security increase works out to about $40 a month extra for the average senior. You might be thinking, that's barely enough for dinner and a movie. But for 77-year-old Betty Reed of Seattle, the extra cash is a godsend. Social Security is her sole source of income.
I have stopped eating meat as often as I used to like it to eat. I mean, meat is just a rarity on my diet, and beef is completely eliminated.
Reed didn't cut out meat for health reasons. She just can't afford it. Now she might splurge on some chicken. 67-year-old Thomas Ronayne has a small pension, which helps a little. His extra Social Security cash will pay for gas so he can go see his doctor, 200 miles from his home in rural Alcona Township, Michigan. He recently put off a routine doctor's appointment.
I called him and said, hey, guy, you know, I'm fine, you're fine. I can't afford to drive down there and back.
Rising gas and food prices have hit older Americans on fixed incomes especially hard. David Rosnick is an economist at the Center for Economic and Policy Research. He says the little bit extra seniors are going to get is just supposed to help them keep up.
We're trying to have them keep pace with inflation. It's not that they're going to be much better off. I mean, this is a treading water kind of adjustment here.
But if you haven't been able to eat meat or get to the doctor, treading water sounds pretty good. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Not all prices are created equal, though. In another sign of a faltering global economy, steel prices are off as much as 30% since the spring. Marketplace's Sarah Gardner reports.
In April, steel was a hot commodity, selling for close to $900 a ton.
And that was based on expectations of demand really starting to pick up.
Expectations that didn't pan out, says Morningstar analyst Bridget Friess. Instead, demand is sort of muddling along. Now, steelmakers have too much supply. Friess says the market's correcting itself and fretting about future demand, worries fed by Europe's money crisis, slower growth in China, and the general global malaise. Analyst Mark Parr at KeyBank Capital Markets.
Certainly, there's a lot of concern. You know, people are discouraged. Unemployment is high.
A few big European steelmakers have temporarily idled some production lines. About half of steel's business comes from construction, an industry still in the doghouse. Steel's other big customer, the auto industry, is recovering, but slowly. And some steel buyers are simply holding off, waiting to see if prices fall even further. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
Greece is the unwilling center of the European debt crisis at the moment, but it's not the only trouble spot over there. Yesterday, the ratings agency Moody's downgraded Spanish debt. And today, Portugal's economy minister said his country needs to change how it does business, a fairly sweeping statement. One of the casualties of the austere economic climate is an ambitious plan for a high-speed train. It would have launched in 2013 and trimmed transit time between Spain and Portugal. Now, though, Portugal says it can't afford it. Lauren Freyer took the old slow train from Madrid to Lisbon.
The train ride from Madrid to Lisbon takes a slow, chugging 10 hours. It's a far cry from the high-speed trains that zip across the rest of Europe. And a far cry from the glory days 500 years ago, when Portuguese explorers linked up the world. But one echo of the past remains. Portugal's trains are leftovers from the 1970s.
I went from England to France on train, France to Italy on train, then I went back.
My fellow traveler Sandro Antunes has been around the block, and he's seen few train systems so Spartan as Portugal's.
I'm a bit surprised, especially that they didn't have internet or anything like that. I thought it was a bit basic.
Portugal's government recognizes the problem. Several years ago, it commissioned a swanky new high-speed train that would have cut the Lisbon-Madrid journey time by two-thirds. But this year, it ran out of money, and the plans have been postponed. Spain's government had already paid $1.6 billion to lay tracks from Madrid to Portugal. Now they'll hit a dead end at the Portuguese border. Luís País Antunes, no relation to Sandro, is a Portuguese lawyer and former member of parliament. He says Portuguese contractors who'd been commissioned to build the new railway are taking legal action. But he says in the end,
we don't have money to pay it, so you have to stop.
The high-speed train is just one of several projects being axed. Another is a new airport for Lisbon. Then there are huge cuts to public sector salaries and benefits. Yet Antunes says the cuts haven't produced the months of angry protests seen in neighboring Spain.
Contrary to Spanish, who tend to be more reactive and more noisy, Portuguese tend to swallow.
Bleary-eyed, we finally pull into Lisbon, overlooking the river where Vasco da Gama set off to explore the world. These days, it's home to sad, empty cafes and a few bored-looking seagulls. Martin Manuel wipes down tables at one of the cafes in Lisbon's port. He used to be a farmer in Portugal's poorest province, Alentejo. But he says you can't make a living off the land anymore. These days, with Portugal's dismal economy, he says that's just one of the things people here have to accept.
We're pessimists by nature. That's why we have fado, our type of music. Do you know it?
Fado is Portugal's melancholy folk music, first sung by widows mourning men lost at sea as they explored distant lands. It's what's playing along the cobblestone streets now, as I make my way back to the train station for the long trip home to Madrid. In Lisbon, I'm Lauren Freyer for Marketplace.
Riots and austerity and prospects of default. There is scarce little good economic news coming out of Europe lately. Politicians are saying there's worse to come, so a little stress is probably understandable. And it's why in Rome there's a new project to take counseling to the people. Megan Williams reports.
In a busy drugstore in Rome, pharmacist Andrea Bartoli points to a sign taped to the shelf above the counter and reads out the information to a client. It's the number of a free nearby psychological counseling service, a service that for the next several months, once a week, is also offered right here inside his drugstore. Psychologist Sara Ebba Di Vaio is the one who approached Bartoli with the idea.
We're trying to reach out to people in distress before they get to the breaking point. Unlike a counseling center, which might intimidate some people, a pharmacy is a safe, familiar place where we can make first contact.
Every Monday afternoon, a pair of trained, professionally accredited psychologists stand at a corner counter with a stack of pamphlets. Curious customers can make an appointment for later, or they can head to the small room in the back here for a free half-hour session of counseling. Psychologist Eduardo Ercoli says the center decided to offer the service when he and his colleagues noticed a rise in job-related stress.
Many people talk about how under pressure they feel with the economic crisis and all the media coverage that's scaring them. There's a lot of fear and uncertainty that gets transformed into general anxiety.
Sara Ebba Di Vaio says the initiative is also a way to promote psychology as a profession in a country she calls populated by charlatans, and people taking pills for problems that might be better resolved by talking.
Obviously, this is also a way to market psychology, to guide people towards counseling, but legitimate counseling with trained professionals.
Pharmacist Andrea Bartoli says he sees the psychologist as an extra service he can offer his customers, not as a threat to his business.
We're two pretty different professional spheres. We fill prescriptions for drugs, whereas the psychologists help people talk through their problems. So no, they don't take business away. If anything, they help business.
Each Monday, he says he sees three or four people have a session in his back office. Throughout the week, he gets dozens of requests for information.
Very good idea.
From people like this woman, who's just left the pharmacy with a pamphlet in hand. She says the service can be useful to a lot of people.
I can think, for instance, of old people. When they feel depressed, all they get given is pills. Might be more helpful and also less expensive to have them have a good old talk about it.
And what about you? Are you going to visit these psychologists?
Definitely.
She's not alone. With more and more Italians worried about the country's economic climate, the service is already spreading to other cities across Italy. in Rome, I'm Megan Williams for Marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note on the way out today, a couple of them, actually. First of all, just a nod to history. Today, as I mentioned up at the top, is the 19th of October. On this day in 1987, Wall Street treated us to something that's become known as Black Monday. The Dow Industrials were off almost 22% that day. You put that in today's context, a drop of 2,500-something points. There are circuit breakers that would stop that nowadays, but still, something to think about. Also this, Herman Cain might be having a surprisingly strong run for the White House, but his pizza just ain't it. The good people at Politico did a taste test, blind, bipartisan panel, all the usual precautions. Cain's alma mater, Godfather, which he ran for 10 years, was unanimously voted worst of the lot by the panel. A campaign spokesman said only this, "I think we can all agree on liking pizza." So there you go. That's Marketplace from APM American Public Media on this Wednesday. Today, the Dow slipped 72 points, about 2/3%, finished at 11,504. The NASDAQ off 53 points, 2%, 2604 at the bell. The S&P 500 gave back 15 points, about 1.25%, settled at 1209. Robbie Carman, Stephen Colon, Bradford Craig, Jeff Peters, and Charlton Thorpe engineered the program for us. You can tune in tomorrow to the Marketplace Morning Report for the latest in business and economic news. And coming up next time back here, a Wall Street thriller.
It's a ticking time bomb movie, and the interesting thing is you kind of know halfway through that the bomb, you know, can't be defused.
Oh, good. I'm Kai Rizdal. Do hope you can join us for that tomorrow. This is APM, American Public Media.